Hello, and welcome to the Nourishing Podcast with your hosts, Melanie Angelus from The Grecian Garden and Emily Morgan from Nourishing Mama. Emily isn't able to be here with us today. All information shared on this podcast relating to specific conditions, healthcare, preventative care, and healthy lifestyles is presented for general informational purposes only. This podcast is for educational purposes only. Today, we will be speaking with Kelly Smith from The Nourishing Home. Kelly is the author of the successful blog, thenourishinghome.com, as well as the author of her new book, Everyday Grain-Free Baking. She develops nourishing, gluten-free recipes the whole family will love. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Melanie. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. I am so excited to get to talk with you. I've actually been following your blog, I think, for a couple years, and I just love how you make cooking real food for the whole family seem so easy. So I know you've got some awesome things to share with us. But let's get started with talking about your real food journey. How did that all begin?
Yeah, well, thank you for your compliments. I appreciate it. I mean, that's definitely my goal, is to try to make it as easy as possible, because a lot of people I know don't all have the same issues going on in their house, and that's kind of where I come from. So what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of families may have one person in the family that needs to be gluten-free, or one family member that needs to be dairy-free, and so it makes it challenging when mom is trying to kind of be the short order cook and meet these different, you know, dietary requirements. And yet the whole family, you know, maybe doesn't want to be inconvenienced. So it's kind of finding that balance between not having to make multiple dishes, finding things that everybody can enjoy, so that you can prepare food that's safe for the members of your family who do have allergies or sensitivities or health conditions that, you know, warrant them having a more restricted diet. So how my journey began was I ended up getting really sick in about 2007, and I just had a number of things going on, and it felt to me like my body was just attacking me and kind of shutting down. And I had always thought that I was eating fairly healthy. I mean, I've always been interested in food. I love to cook and nutrition, and I didn't really want to be eating a lot of processed foods. But at the same time, I wasn't eating as healthy, obviously, as I should have been, and I was eating things that were detrimental to my body, which at the time I didn't know. You know, we were told at that time that the healthiest diet was a whole grain diet, a low-fat diet, and so that's pretty much what I was doing. And unfortunately for me, not knowing, you know, what I know now, the very things that I was eating were the things that were undoing my health. And so my journey started by basically lots of prayer. I was going through all these tests.
Yes.
Doctors weren't finding anything wrong with me. And so obviously there was something wrong with me, but they weren't having much luck in finding it. So to make a long story short, I ended up with a diagnosis of an autoimmune inflammatory condition. It's a bladder condition called interstitial cystitis, and it's basically where you have the symptoms of a bladder infection, which are horrible, yet there's no bacteria, so they can't treat you. So basically what they do is they put you on these medications, which are very hard on your liver, and it's to try to help you alleviate the pain. And so I went ahead and started those medications because I was desperate at that point to do anything to get rid of the pain. And so it wasn't but maybe 2 months later that I started having all kinds of stomach and bowel issues. And so then I was back in the doctor's office again, having everything looked at. And thankfully, I had a very, very good Western medical doctor who incorporated a lot of alternative medicine into his practice. He was a urogynecologist, meaning he was both a urologist and a gynecologist. And he had told me that all the research they were doing into my condition also seemed to indicate that people who had this condition had other autoimmune issues like IBS, and so that's what he had suspected. And so I went through all these tests and found out that I did have IBS too, and so then they started looking and thinking maybe I had Crohn's and other things like that, because I was continuing to make little steps forward and then big steps backward. So I ended up kind of getting frustrated by the whole process. And thankfully, God brought this couple into our small group at church. That was Weston A. Price people.
Wow.
And they gave me the book, Nourishing Traditions. And so that's how my real food journey started. I read that book, and it made a lot of sense to me, and I made a lot of those changes, and I started feeling better. And then, you know, as I progressed and kind of got the toxins out of my body and was eating real food and smoking my grains and all of that stuff, and starting to feel better, then other things started emerging to where eventually within about six to eight months after that, I started suspecting very heavily that gluten actually might be the real cause of most of my symptoms. And the more research I did, the more that I felt convinced that it was an issue. So I did a gluten trial where I was off gluten for 3 weeks, and all of a sudden, it was amazing how much better I was feeling. And then I reintroduced gluten back into my diet again for another week, and all of these symptoms and problems that I was having started creeping back into my life again. And so that's kind of, in a nutshell, my journey, where I really figured out through food what was causing me problems. I also did some other tests and things like that with my physicians, and, you know, we've pretty much come to the conclusion that I have to eliminate gluten from my diet. And so since then, I've done some other things, like I'm pretty much 99% grain-free right now, because for me, the grains can be inflammatory and cause joint pain and other things like that. And so it's just been a really amazing journey that the Lord has had me on. And so I wanted to give back to the community, because I see so many people that go through similar things. And so I wanted to be able to help as best I could by sharing my journey and the things that I've learned along the way.
Wow, what an incredible journey. And, you know, it's amazing that it started with just a food change. And, you know, the book Nourishing Traditions, it really gets around. It's, to me, would you agree that it's almost like the gateway drug? It, like, gets you in.
I really believe that. I think that I still recommend people read that book, only because I do firmly believe that there is no one diet that's perfect for everyone. It really is a personal journey. And so, yes, I believe that the thing that's most profound about that book is the way it opens up your eyes to our food system. And it just is so logical in how it presents the information. I mean, as a believer, it just makes sense that if we eat the food that God created specifically for our bodies to digest and assimilate and use as nutrients to nourish our body and heal our bodies, that we're going to be healthier than if we eat the foods that man makes. And I'm talking of artificial, you know, everything. And then also, for lack of a better word, you can edit this out if you think it's too crude, but but they bastardize our food system, and that they take healthy foods and they process them in a way that makes them unrecognizable within our bodies. And so our bodies are like getting all these things put into them that they were never intended to have, and they have to do something with it. You know, and our liver is an amazing organ that tries its best to process out all these toxins that we put in, but at some point our liver just kind of throws its hands up in the air, and, you know, then these toxins are being circulated through our bodies. And so, you know, although I know that, you know, we're all going to grow old and die, I think a lot of our problems as far as this just substantial increase in autoimmune illnesses is the result of all these toxins that we're putting in our body that are making our bodies attack themselves.
Wow, I wholeheartedly agree and resonate with so much of what you're saying. And it's amazing to me that you went through all of that and you got this new education, but that you really wanted to share it with other people and you really wanted to help other people. So is that kind of how your blog got started?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny backwards thing. I never intended to be a blogger, and in fact, I didn't even know what a blog was. Even when I started doing some research and things, you know, looking online, my tendency was to look for actual research, because my My background is medicine. I actually was a healthcare writer for 20 years. And so I wrote papers for physicians. I disseminated information from physicians into literature that patients could understand. I disseminated information from physicians that other physicians could understand. So I was very comfortable with reading white papers and medical studies. And so I was really looking first from my comfort zone of Western medicine, which is what the business that I was in for 20 years. And when I wasn't getting the answers that I really wanted, I started looking into other research into more alternative medicine and using things like acupressure, acupuncture, because those things actually are very helpful for the particular conditions I had. And so then I started looking more at nutrition because I thought, well, certainly what I'm eating has got to either aggravate my condition or help it. And so that's kind of how it started with me. And so, you know, I really wanted to help people that don't have the time to go read all this stuff. And what does it all mean? And what does it mean to me? And so I started with a Facebook page, believe it or not. Wow. And so all the people at my church are on Facebook. I don't know why my church loves Facebook. So my friends at church and people at church that had been praying for me and knew that I was very sick and was seeing how much that they were all seeing how much better I was doing, they were asking lots of questions. Well, what are you doing? And what are you eating? And, you know, I would bring things to church and they would really like it. Well, what is that? And why is it healthier? And so I just started a Facebook page called The Nourishing Home, and I started sharing my recipes as notes on Facebook, believe it or not.
Wow.
And so I just used my Facebook page like a blog, actually, and I would write a note about a particular health issue that I thought people should know about, or I would put a recipe up as a note on Facebook. And I just started connecting with these bloggers and started realizing there are blogs out there and reading blogs. And so people were getting frustrated because they're like, I have to search through all your notes to find a recipe, and why don't you start a blog? And so that's when I really started praying to God, you know, is this something that you want me to do? Is this a ministry that you have for me? And so then when my husband and I felt very much so that this was indeed something that the Lord had intended, I actually quit my job, and I came home and I started blogging. And that was in October of 2011, and my blog launched in April of 2012.
I mean, it's amazing to see God's hand in guiding you through this whole process. It's like he had a plan the whole time, and your blog is beautiful. You have beautiful pictures. It's a really clean layout. You can kind of go to your blog and spend time there. And your recipes are really family friendly. I mean, they're great for kids. So did you have any tips for moms on how to get their kids involved in the kitchen?
Oh, absolutely. And I really believe passionately about getting your kids in the kitchen. And the reason that I believe that is that it's so important is because, well, there's a couple of things. Number one, if you have a picky eater, I will let you in on a little tip. The more that you can get your kids to help you make with their eating, the less picky they will come over time. You have to be patient with that because it really depends on a lot of factors. It depends on how picky your kid is because kids do differ in what tastes good to them and what. And then it also really depends on how long your kids have been eating a processed food diet or has been eating a diet of things that they've now maybe had to have restricted from their diet. And now they're going to have to get used to the fact they can't have those particular food items, whether it's just simply that you're trying to weed out processed foods or trying to weed out something like, let's say, gluten, because they have a gluten sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And so the more that you can get them in the kitchen with you making things, the more that their hands are on the foods that they're making, the more willing they are to actually eat the things that they make. And so that's a really great technique for getting kids to open up their minds and you know, broaden their culinary horizon, so to speak. Kids also really are creative, and they most of the time they really do like to be helpful. And so getting them in the kitchen allows them to express their creativity. And also, it's teaching them a lifelong skill. if we want our children to grow up and kind of buck the system of fast food and processed foods, we need to teach them how to do that. So it's really not good enough that we're cooking them unprocessed foods and feeding it to them. We need to show them how to do that so that when we launch them out into the world, they can do it too. They're going to know, they're going to have that knowledge and that confidence of being able to prepare meals. And so it's a great classroom. I mean, I know a lot of people homeschool, so it can easily be incorporated into homeschool curriculum. There's math skills, following directions, all kinds of great things that can be learned in the kitchen. I don't homeschool, so if you're thinking, oh my goodness, I work full-time and I don't homeschool, how am I going to do this? Well, I was right there in your shoes. Remember when I started my real food journey, I was working a job. And so a lot of this had to happen over the weekends or in the evenings. And so as much as I could, I would get my kids in the kitchen with me on the weekends. If you would like some tips, Melanie, on like things that you can do, I'd be happy to share those too.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Okay, so a couple of tips. First, I would say be realistic. It's really important that when you bring your kids in the kitchen that you consider age-appropriate things for them. The younger they are, the shorter their attention span. And so you want to make sure that you have them doing things that are age-appropriate. And when you start to see your child getting a little bored, then go ahead and say, thanks for your help. You know, why don't you sit here and play with this toy or something. You know, you don't want to frustrate them like, no, we're not done with the recipe yet. You know, because then cooking's not really going to be a joy. It's going to be a burden. So you want to keep it realistic. If you go to my website, you'll see there's kids in the kitchen in healthy recipes. So if you hover over healthy recipes at the very bottom, you'll see kids in the kitchen. And I have a free downloadable on age-appropriate kitchen and tasks. And so you can just download that for free, and it will tell you based on your child's age, toddler, you know, preschooler, elementary school, and it will give you ideas for things that your kids can do with you in the kitchen. So I'd really recommend that. The other thing I would recommend is obviously keep the recipes very easy when you're working with kids, and keep, again, the time short and sweet so that it's always fun what they're doing. And then make sure you schedule it on your meal plan, especially if you're really busy, or you make it a non-essential task that you're doing where you have more time, because you have to be prepared that it's going to be messier if your kids come in the kitchen. They're not going to measure the flowers neatly as you do. So you may have a little extra cleanup time involved, but it's totally worth it because you have to look at the big picture. And the big picture is you want to raise children that are comfortable, confident, and knowledgeable about how to cook. I have two boys, and so I definitely want to encourage moms of boys, don't, you know, leave your boys out. Your boys are really going to have a great time in the kitchen, too, just like the girls do. And again, you just kind of have to look at one of your children might be more excited to bake and another child might be more excited to cook, you know, and kind of capitalize that. You know, don't exclude one from the other. You want your baker to learn to cook too, but if they tend to enjoy baking more, which is my younger son, we do a lot more baking, but I also get him in and we talk about cooking as well. I always joke that when they go off to college that all of their friends are going to come over to their dorm room or their apartment because they're going to know how to cook.
Yes.
So
I love that. And their future wives are going to absolutely love you. They're going to love them because they have developed some skills. And those are some fantastic techniques because they are, like you said, able to express their creativity. You're able to give them a real education on what real food is and where it comes from. Now, one thing you also do, which I love, is you meal plan. And you have these fantastic meal plans on your website, and you show people, you know, different ideas throughout the week so that they can create nourishing meals. And, you know, why is that important? And is there like a specific system that you follow?
Yes. I'm so happy you mentioned the meal planning because I do feel like it's pretty much the foundation of keeping your health goals, keep moving forward and progressing in your healthy living goals. It's really hard to say I'm going to eat healthy and then not have a plan to do it. You've probably heard the expression, if you fail to plan, you will plan to fail. And so that's kind of how I feel about meal planning. If you take the time to actually make a meal plan, it's really hard to fail in your healthy living goals, because what you've done is you've made out a plan for the week of what you're going to eat. And by doing that, you not only stay on target with your healthy living goals, but you also make it a lot less stressful, time intensive in the kitchen. And best of all, because we all have experienced that pinch of real food costs more, and it, you know, it really impacts your budget. But if you make a meal plan, it can really help you wrangle that in and keep your budget under control. And the reason is because when you make out your meal plan, you're buying exactly what you need for your meal. So you're not, you know, impulse purchasing and buying a bunch of things that you never get to using. And then you go to clean out your fridge and you have all these foods that have expired, or they've started to grow, you know, fuzz on them, and you're like, oh no, now I have to throw this away. And you're basically throwing money away, you know, when you're throwing food away. And so by meal planning, you can save time, you can save money, you can save stress, and best of all, you can keep yourself on target with your healthy living goals. So when I was working full time, I was kind of pulling my hair out because I knew I had to eat this certain way, and there were a lot of foods that I needed to get out of my diet in order to feel better. But I was so limited in time. And so actually a friend of mine said, Kelly, you should make a weekly meal plan. And, you know, that way you know what you're going to have each day. And then you only have to go to the grocery store one time. And I thought that was such a brilliant idea that I actually spent some time reading some books on meal planning and how to meal plan. And so I tell people, you know, the meal planning system that's best is the one that you're going to actually use. And so for me, I do a 2-week meal plan. And I post that up over at The Better Mom. You can find it on my website, and then you just click on it. It takes you over to The Better Mom, and you can look through my archives and find all of my meal plans on my site under meal planning. But then for my subscribers, people who subscribe to the Nourishing Home blog, each week I send them out a full meal plan, which I call a meal planning kit, and it has a shopping list, and it also has prep ahead task recommendations, things that you can do ahead of time that make it even easier to get dinner on the table during the week. And I also send subscribers my ebook called Meal Planning Made Easy, and it really walks you through step by step how to meal plan. And all of the information there is basically all of the knowledge that you need to start meal planning. And again, you can use your own system, whether you want to do it monthly, weekly, bi-weekly. It's the information there that kind of helps you and walks you through how to meal plan. And I guarantee if you start meal planning, it will totally revolutionize your life in the kitchen. It will make it so much less stressful, and it will make it so much easier. It's just so foundational. That's why I so firmly believe in it, and that's why I want to make it all free. Because I want people to be able to get this information and make healthy changes in their lives. I know there's a lot of meal plans out there that are fantastic too, but they cost money. They're like $5, $10 a month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just feel like in my heart, I want to make it free because I want to help people to eat healthy, because I know I've experienced and seen how much it's changed my life and my family's.
Yeah. And I mean, really, who doesn't need to save money or time, and it saves on stress? Now, what happens when you do a meal plan and let's say, I don't know, something comes up and you can't follow it? How do you remedy that?
Well, two things. First off, when you do your meal plan, you got to be realistic about looking at your calendar. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, the things that come up are the things that we have forgotten about on our calendar. Uh-huh. So for instance, you know, if I make a meal plan and I've got 4 meals on my meal plan that are fairly complicated meals and that they take a little bit longer than 30 minutes, maybe they take 45 minutes to put together. And, you know, I've scheduled those on days when I'm going to be in the car running one kid to baseball and taking another kid to baseball. So that's not very realistic. So of course I'm going to fail in, you know, getting that dinner on the table. Whereas if I look at my calendar ahead of time before I meal plan, And I know, like, let's say, for example, on Tuesday and Thursday, it's really hard for me to spend a lot of time in the kitchen. What I can do for Thursday on my meal plan is either plan for leftovers or plan for a very easy way to repurpose a food. And I go through that in my book. I talk about something I call cook twice, cook once, eat twice or more. Mm-hmm. It's basically batch cooking and other methods like grouping meals where you can do these little tactics that help you get dinner on the table really fast on days when you're in a rush. For days when the family's going in multiple directions and I don't really have time to do anything, I'll usually serve leftovers, you know, and I can serve them in very creative ways because not everybody in my family is a big fan of leftovers. And so that also helps. If you do have something unexpected come up when you've carefully planned your meal plan out, and let's say, you know, a friend pops into town and you all want to go out to dinner together, now what do I do with this other meal that I had planned to make and now I'm not going to make it that night? Well, that's also fairly simple because you can be usually somewhat flexible in saying, okay, well, then that meal is going to be the first meal that I make next week. You know, so that way you're just carrying over those food items that you purchased into your next week's meal plan, if that makes sense.
Yes, and that's really helpful, just being flexible that it's a plan and life still happens and that's okay if it doesn't go perfectly. So that's really great. Now,
Absolutely. And one thing I'll say is just so that people know, my meal plans, you know, I'll say Monday I'm going to have this, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. There are some times when, you know, Wednesday comes around and I look at the meal plan, I'm like, I just don't feel like making that or, you know, whatever. And I will sometimes swap. Like I'll say, I'm going to make Friday's meal today and I'll push that one to Friday. You know, your meal plan doesn't have to be rigid where you have to make each meal. The key is that you've planned out some meals so that you have everything in the house and you have everything that you need ahead of time to make that. You're not making extra stops at the grocery store or wasting ingredients. Mm-hmm. I also tell people, you know, if you're just starting with meal planning, don't plan out an entire week worth of meals. Kind of ease into it. If you're not doing any meal planning at all and you've just been sort of the fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants person, mm-hmm. be planning out 2 to 3 meals a week. And once you get the feel for it and you realize, oh my goodness, it's so much easier when I have these 3 meals planned for the week, that will be the encouragement you need and the success that you've tasted that makes you want to do more meal planning, you know. So whatever it is that meets your family's needs. I know some of my readers, they have a family tradition where they go out to eat every Sunday as a family. Mm-hmm. Right, then they only meal plan 6 times a week. So again, it's just being flexible and finding the right way to meal plan that works for you, something that you're going to stick with.
I love that because usually I think that's what happens to me is I will plan out a meal, but I might not feel like making it that day and I want to make something else. So it's just having that flexibility of, oh, you know what, I can make that another day and it's all good. Now you have, you know, just that fantastic story of your health being recovered from eating real food. And it seems like pretty much your whole world was changed. Did you notice any improvements with your family since eating real food?
Oh, of course, yes. I will tell you that I'm kind of, I'm an all-in person. When I believe in something and I realize this is the answer, I am easily able to just cut the ties from my past and move forward. But not everybody in your family is going to be that way. So what the mistake I made that I caution people not to make is literally when I read Nourishing Traditions and I realized that we were eating so much processed food, I literally went through my pantry with my garbage can and I was just throwing things away left and right. And my husband came home and he about had a heart attack when he opened up the pantry. As did my children, like, what just happened? In the pantry. So, you know, you have to be sensible about easing your family into it. Of course, in the case of, you know, to get your child diagnosed with celiac, the gluten's got to come out of the house and the family's got to, you know, back one another up on that.
Yes.
For the most part, if it's healthy living goals and we just want to, you know, decrease you know, processed foods, you really need to sit down as a family and discuss it and what it means and get your husband on board and be on the same page. And making baby steps always makes better progress than just going crazy and throwing everything away like I did. So really what I did was I just started easing them into it by having them taste these things that I was making and make over recipes of old things that we used to eat. And that's really been my process the whole way. When I went gluten-free, they were all rolling their eyes like, oh, no, now she's gluten-free. Do we have to be gluten-free too? And I thought, no, you guys don't. And so then I took the pressure off. But then as I made gluten-free things and they tried them and they loved them, you know, I didn't have to push them to be gluten-free. So, you know, they still eat their gluten-based things when they're out and about. Mm-hmm. And we have a few gluten things in the, you know, pantry that mm-hmm. they particularly prefer, like the bread that they like. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they eat the things that I'm making so that I don't have to be a shorter cook. Mm-hmm. And because they taste good. But again, it came because I slowly was like, here, try this. This muffin's actually really good. Give it a shot. And wow, I really like this muffin. This is great. Because now I only have to make gluten-free muffins, or I only have to make gluten-free desserts. They love all the desserts, you know, not that we're eating dessert every day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are certain things that they want. They want their gluten-based bread. And believe me, I get it, because gluten bread, there's just nothing like it. But, you know, for me, it's really eliminated me having to do so much short order cooking. And when it comes to dinner naturally lends itself to being easily gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they really even think about the fact that every dinner they're eating is gluten-free. So, right. So again, I think that it's been clear that they've seen some progress in their own health. My husband has had a lot of issues himself that he has noticed that the food really has made a difference in how he feels. He is a semi-professional. I say semi-professional because he isn't a professional, but he races an expert class mountain biking. Mm. Diet has tremendously impacted his abilities on his mountain bike, and he's seen that firsthand. Of course, because he loves to mountain bike so much, he's more motivated to eat healthy because he sees how much better he performs when he eats a healthy diet. And so same with my children. My kids had various issues. My youngest was prone to ear infections and asthma, and my older son was sinus infections and fatigue, always saying he was tired all the time. And since we changed our diet, no more ear infections, no more sinus infections. My younger son, when he gets sick now, he doesn't have to use the nebulizer or an inhaler.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, so we've seen some really amazing, amazing things, not just for me, but for my family as well.
And it's probably little things. It seems like when we first hear that we have to go gluten-free, we automatically picture that we're going to be eating cardboard. But inevitably what happens is going gluten-free tends to open up just a whole other world of ingredients that aren't wheat-based, and it actually tastes good. So your family approving of the muffins is true, and I will tell you, I have made the chocolate cupcakes in your book. There's no way to know that you use healthy ingredients to make the cupcake. They really were amazing.
Well, thank you, and that's really been the blessing, I'll tell you, of having three men in my house that are somewhat stubborn, digging their heels in of we don't want to be gluten-free, because they're really my best critics. And also, I'm very, very close to all of our neighbors in our neighborhood, and we've been living in the same neighborhood for 16 years now. And so I've literally, every recipe I try out on them, does this really taste like a chocolate cupcake?
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll tell me, no, it tastes weird, or, you know, and then I go back to the drawing board, because my goal isn't just to make gluten-free stuff that tastes good for people who are used to being gluten-free. My goal is to make gluten-free stuff that tastes good for people that aren't used to be gluten-free, because, again, so many families have this mismatched thing that one person's gluten-free, everybody else isn't. And, you know, it just makes it easier when the stuff tastes normal.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's always my goal, is it tastes normal. Even when I was doing nourishing traditions, and I was trying, no offense to nourishing traditions, but, you know, I was trying some of the recipes, and I'm like, wow, okay, this is interesting. You know, I wanted it to taste like what we were used to eating, but be healthier. And so that's kind of my goal at my site is really hopefully for people who are just starting out on real food or on a gluten-free diet or a grain-free diet to be able to make something and go, this tastes like something that's familiar and it's good and it's normal. And also for people who've been like me, you know, on this journey for many years, they can enjoy it as well.
One message that's evident on your website is that it's okay to take a baby step into real food and hang out there until you get the hang of it. And then it's okay to take another step. I love it that your message is it's okay where you're at and you can make changes at your own pace, which I think is great. And another thing that's really evident on your website is your relationship with Christ. And that is so encouraging to me. I was raised in a Christian home and natural medicine wasn't kind of promoted when I was growing up. So it was almost like I saw another part of God when he kind of took me on this a natural health journey myself. But how has God been a part of your journey and your healing and even your writing?
Well, thank you so much. I have goosebumps right now. Always makes me so happy when people see the Lord shining through in my sight, because honestly, that is my goal. And so I think the reason why you see me saying take baby steps, there is no perfect diet, I'm not preaching a mantra of this is the, you know, diet that will save you, because honestly, your diet isn't going to save you ultimately. Yes. And so at some point, we're all going to face our creator. And so my goal is the real life, the real health that comes through the Lord Jesus Christ. And so as much as I blog about, you know, taking charge of your health and using the ingredients that God's provided for our health and well-being, I'm always hoping that people are seeing, and when people personally email me, I'm pointing out, first and foremost, we need to put our trust in the Lord for our healing.
Yes.
You know, we can't trust the creation. We need to trust the creator.
Absolutely.
And so I really want to make sure people aren't making food an idol, you know, mm-hmm. something where they're pursuing food and obsessing over food and every little thing that they eat because they're so concerned to, you know, heal themselves. Food is really important, and God can use it to heal us. He can use other things too, like essential oils and, you know, other things that are out there that he's created. But at the end of the day, the Lord is Lord, and so we need to be seeking food for our help and trusting him. And it's just amazing what he'll do when we do that, because even though I am so much better than I was when I first started my healthy living journey, I still struggle. I still have setbacks. Mm-hmm. I still have recurrences. And you know what? It may sound crazy, but I actually embrace them and I love them, mm-hmm. because it keeps me focused on the fact that God's in charge of my health. Mm-hmm. And so it's not up to me to just do everything perfectly and then my health will be perfect. I can't do that. I'm not God. And so I just look to him and I say, you know, I need your grace today. I'm not feeling well. And, you know, and then I try to be smart and wise and discerning about how I care for my body. But at the end of the day, I don't want it to control my entire life where I'm stressed and, you know, my whole life is revolving around what I eat every day. You know, I want to have that balance of enjoying life, of food not being a burden, of me not being a slave to it. It should be serving me, not me serving it. Mm. And so that's why I like to talk about baby steps, mm-hmm. and taking your time and finding the diet that works for you. And, you know, and for some people, it's going to be most of the time, you know, the 80-20. Most of the time we're eating healthy, and there's that 20% of the time that we're not, you know, and if that works for you, great. Mm-hmm. And then for other people who have chronic illnesses that have to be more restrictive, you know, I can't do 80-20 with gluten. Mm-hmm. It's not wise. It's not discerning. You know, but there's other things that I can do 80-20 with. Like if a friend of mine makes me a gluten-free treat from a gluten-free mix and it has sugar in it and it has starch in it, and I know it's okay if I eat that one gluten-free cupcake that she's so sweetly labored over, you know, because I don't want it to be, you know, something that divides me among, you know, my friends. So I just, you know, I'm so glad that you see Christ on my site. Definitely the Lord has been with me every step of the way. I started in prayer with my journey and asking God to guide the hands of my physicians and help me find answers. And I'm every day praying, you know, Lord, keep me humble, keep me focused on you. And, you know, like I said, when I have those setbacks, okay, Lord, you know, I need your grace. Thank you for reminding me that it's all about you.
Yeah, and it's almost freeing to kind of let God have control and just sit in the back seat, and it's not about us. I love that we're going to face challenges, but it's just pressing in and praying and applying His grace every day, you know, where we fall short. So I absolutely love that. And can you tell us your testimony and how you found Jesus?
Absolutely. I was the daughter of a pastor, and so for years I thought that I was a Christian because I went to church, and, you know, I didn't do that, and I did this, you know, kind of a checklist mentality. And so it was really amazing how God just brought me out here to California, and my husband and I didn't know anybody. And we found a church, an evangelical, non-denominational, just a Bible-teaching church. Mm-hmm. And the lessons really started challenging me about, is Jesus really the Lord of your life? Meaning, is He really your King? Like, are all the decisions you're making based on what God's will is for you? You know, and so I really started pondering these things, and it really opened up my heart that although I went to church and, you know, I, you know, didn't do bad things, but I was doing good things. But really, when it came down to it, my heart wasn't following after Christ with love and passion for Him to be the King of my life. And so it's kind of a funny story of me really finding the Lord in later in life at age 37. And realizing and repenting that, hey, you know what? Only Jesus is good, and His goodness is what covers my sin. It's not me trying to do all these things, and then Jesus is kind of my, you know, coverall. He really is the Lord, and He really is sufficient. And so, so that's my testimony. And so, ever since that point in time, I've just been a completely different person. You know, what I think about, what my goals are, how I live my life, just all for Him. And it has just been amazing. And just the joy and the happiness, even in the midst of pain and suffering when I was going through all those tests and trying to figure out what was wrong with me, I just kept thinking about Paul, you know, where he asked the Lord three times to take away the thorn in his flesh. And God's answer was, my grace is sufficient. So I really try to encourage people that are struggling with their health, you know, and they aren't seeing the results that they want, to just, you know, rest in His grace. He may not have for you complete healing, but He's got good plans for you, you know. And so it's just so comforting to me to be able to not just help people with their physical health, but also with their spiritual health as well, of just seeing our challenges in life, seeing our trials in life as opportunities to draw closer to God. And so that is my testimony of Him just kind of waking up my heart and helping me to realize, you know what, you're really not living for me. You're going to church and you're going through the motions, but I don't have your heart. I need your heart.
Yeah, that's so good. I mean, He's evident that He is number one in your life. And the fact that you want to help people with the spiritual aspect is so key, and the physical aspect, because we are a spirit and a soul and a body. And it takes working on all three of those. So I think that's just great. And so, Kelly, before I let you go, where can people learn more about you and your book? And do you have anything new coming up?
Sure. I mean, obviously, you can go to thenourishinghome.com and you can access everything that we talked about today. And again, it's all free. I really do see my blog as a ministry. And so it's all there available for you. You can find my meal plans. You can find my kids in the kitchen information, recipes, you know, whatever. You can read my about page if you want to learn more about me. And then as far as future plans, I do have some future plans. I'm actually going to be doing more speaking this year, which I'm really excited about. And so I'll be talking about that on my blog. And then I'm also going to be doing a couple of interesting things outside of recipes. I'm going to be talking more about essential oils. It's something that I have been using over the past year and have really seen some dramatic results. And so now I'm ready to talk about it. Because that's one thing about me is I don't talk about things unless I use them and I've seen results. Mm-hmm. You know, my site is definitely a ministry, and so I want to make sure that any resource that I'm recommending or talking about is something that I personally believe in and have seen results. So I'm excited about the essential oils because I feel like they're a great complement to a healthy diet.
Yes. I am so excited about your speaking engagements. That sounds awesome. And your information on essential oils, I think a lot of people will probably just get a benefit out of that. So Kelly, thank you so much for taking time talking with us. And I encourage everyone to check out Kelly's website, thenourishinghome.com, as well as her new book, Everyday Grain-Free Baking. If you are interested in being interviewed on our podcast or have questions for us, please email us at thenourishingpodcast@gmail.com. Or check out our respective websites, thegrecianGarden.com and nourishingmama.blogspot.com. This is Melanie wanting you all to live a nourished life.